I'm collapsing, breaking down. Silently onto the ground. Above me, the azure sky. The last thing I see in my life. Swallow makes a little cry. As I look up for the last time, there won't be a miracle. There's really nothing more to come. Did we connect enough? I'm collapsing just now. Falling with the sun, an orange sunbeam on the rock. The last thing I see in my life, and no one's even bothered. Whether I even worked, I felt something like happiness. As I lose out on this heart to death. Did we connect?
Hello, everyone. Today is January 1st, 2023. Happy New Year to everyone. This is meeting 130 of the Extinctionati. The agenda today was supposed to be geoengineering, transhumanism, and we were going to talk a little bit about Lambda, the artificial intelligence with a female voice. But with the little attendance we have, I leave it up to you to decide what we will start with. So I heard that MD could talk to us about an interesting visit he had, and I'm sure going south has got a lot to tell us about artificial intelligence. So I leave it to you guys. Go on, MD.
I was mentioning there earlier that I visited the Chauvet Caves today, which are near Pointe de la Arc in the south of France, and how it's 30,000 years old cave paintings of lions, cave bears, ibex, woolly rhinoceros, horses, oryx, stuff like that. And it's really impressive the how creative the people were back then. I suppose one point that struck me was the fact that there was no painting of any human faces. I think Lord Ewan mentioned before about the Cro-Magnons arrival into Europe. So this is at a time when basically the Neanderthals were meant to have died out and modern humans were established in Europe. So it was extremely interesting that, this is pre the last ice age. I think just after the previous ice age before that, or effectively it was going through an ice age. So most of Northern Europe was covered in ice at the time. And these were the parts of Southern Europe, which were basically the large flora and fauna of pre the last ice age of 10,000 years ago we're living. So it's pretty amazing how vivid the art is, how they got a sense of perspective in it. And obviously that had an awful lot, animals had an awful lot of meaning to them. Because it appeared that also that the caves were used by cave bears in the winter, but the humans were only going there in the summertime to do their painting, and they respected the presence of the cave bears in the winter. And they had something like altars with skulls that had been left there for since 30,000 years ago, obviously placed by humans on the altars of the cave bears, but it was more like adoration rather than, there was no signs of any killing of any animals or humans or anything like that. So that's what I did today.
Well, that was a good idea. That was a good idea for today. Wow.
Sounds pretty nice. Were you able to sort of go in there and try to experience it freshly, like for the first time, or were you sort of too colored by having seen it on cartoons everything?
It's a replica. It's a replica cave. So obviously, the original cave, they don't allow people in there, but they've built a replica cave up on top of the hill. So somewhere in this kind of face of a very large cliff, which is not really a cliff, which is more like, a steep terrain with some trees growing in it, there is the entrance to the real cave, which that's been kept a secret, so effectively by the French authorities. And they have built a replica cave on top of the hill, which seems to be very well representative of what's in the real cave. And you get a guided tour of it, so it's quite well organized. I was surprised it was open today, but I checked it online. So I said I'd take a trip up there. So yeah, I think it's really impressive what they were doing 30,000 years ago. Like the quality of you got to realize they were drawing with bits of charcoal and rubbing in with their hand to get the shading of the pelts, of the fur, of the skins and stuff like that, to get shadow effects and then perspective effect where they'd put multiple animals one behind the other. So really their thinking seems to have been just as advanced as ours in terms of that perspective, in terms of, visual art perspective.
But of course, since this is extinction art, it kind of begs the question about symbolic culture, like the book Running on Emptiness by John Zerzan from about 1992 or something. So I think even the 30,000 year old paintings on that cave wall are an effect of the symbolic culture explosion of human beings. I think the general opinion is that we have like 300,000 years as Homo sapiens or whatever, and so that your 30,000 years paintings, those are the last 10%, the newest 10% of our days on this planet, and most likely we had already passed the tipping points of symbolic culture and language and all of that kind of thing, and it was only a question of time before we would have like two cars for each family and television in every living room, I guess, or every room of the house.
I guess, but there was you said the Grotte de Chauvet had 30,000 years. So it was all Homo sapiens. There was no. I'm trying to get my dates back in mind, but because they have been.
It was after the time of the.
After the Neanderthals.
The Neanderthals had died out about 38,000.
Yes, that's right.
30,000 years ago.
Yeah,
this Cro Magnum had arrived at about 46,000 years ago, so there was some overlap. Lord, you had mentioned about some possibility of interbreeding, but I don't know anything about that. That's not my speciality. Yeah. So, just one point in what Going South said about visual representation, because I've been doing some thinking about this, not exactly along because of what I was looking at today. Like the visual representation that these people were doing is firsthand, basically, experience, which is quite different to the world we've gone into, where we're taking a representational model and then we're doing a mathematical model of that, and then we're doing mathematical equations like to model that. Then we produce a digital model and then we get an output. Where many layers are, what's the better way of saying it? Many orders away from the real hands-on truth than they were. Because, they probably touched the animals. They definitely did touch some of the animals after they killed them and after they hunted them for their food, like. So the... I can't say I agree with you. That representation fundamentally means that we're going to end up with bed and with this modern industrial civilization and cars and all that. I think that there's many orders to it, or degrees to it, and we've come many further degrees without realizing how far we are from the reality.
I think I agree with you, because I'm no, even though I read that book, I'm not 100% against technology or anything. It's just I think maybe he's right anyway as a philosopher, that it's kind of a slippery slope when we start having campfires and taming the fire and speaking amongst each other around the fire and start expanding the language and making depictions and stuff. All of those things are great, but I think maybe there is kind of an inbuilt mechanism that is self-perpetuating, almost like climate change, right? So that you pass a tipping point, which maybe is written symbols or written language or something, maybe earlier than that, and then it's only a question of time when you end up with self-conscious computers or whatever, and nuclear bombs. It sounds a bit, you know, depressing and stuff, but I think maybe there's something to it. Yeah.
I don't know the book you're on about, but I'm going to give my two bits on this. Like, there's a saying about, you know, when you don't know where you're going and you come to a crossroads, any way will do, right? Because it doesn't matter, you didn't know where you're going anyway, so you can take any of the options. And I think that's effectively what's happened to humanity. Humanity has ended up taking options over different time, but they didn't know where they were going. And so this is something for me where that was our key. There's a possibility that could have been one of the reasons why we ended up where we are. Because, you know, that was the decision that was made by the majority at the time. Do you know what I mean? In terms of whatever society was the pre-society before we ended up where we are, which took multiple turns along the way. You understand? So if you don't know where you're going, any way will do. That I would be more of the inclination of that's how we ended up here.
Yes, and I think also, you know, the normal or maybe naive way of thinking about decisions and forks in the road and stuff is that, yeah, your tribe or your country or your nation or something makes a decision and then we go in that direction. But if you think about the whole planet, the whole globe of humans, maybe then there is a kind of higher order decision making thing, because it's kind of the, maybe that's a bad example, but you know, with nuclear weapons, you know, if one nation on the planet invents and produces nuclear weapons, then eventually that would be a factor for the entire planet. And maybe that's the same thing with agriculture and stuff, that it only takes one country to one tribe to take the wrong road at the junction, and then that becomes a defining factor for human society, agriculture.
Yeah, and it makes me think of something we've already talked about, is the inability for us as human beings to project ourselves further than immediate benefit or short-term planning. There seems like to be a disability in us on that line, you know. It's probably linked to the disconnect with nature, but there's also this inability to grasp the bigger picture.
Yeah, but some of these things you don't know until, you know, hindsight. You know, hindsight is a great teacher. So in hindsight, we probably shouldn't have taken the road that ended us up in, you know, this capitalist system where everyone has to compete for effectively greenbacks to keep ourselves going within the system. So in hindsight, you know, it's kind of getting clearer that this type of system will exhaust your resources pretty quick, because it leads to over resource use, because the more resources you use, the more products you can sell, the more greenbacks you can get, the more secure you are, you know. What's something about survival of the fittest, that the greatest mistake of Darwin to say was the survival part, because everyone wants to survive, but they're trying to survive too well. So hindsight is a great teacher, but you know, have we gone too far to even use the hindsight to fix it?
Well, what you're basically saying is that we were probably doomed the moment we started being symbolic, basically, when we started abstraction.
No, I don't agree with you. I didn't say that.
No, correct me if I'm wrong. Yes, go ahead.
No, I'm saying that like the saying, when you don't know where you're going, when you come to the crossroads, any road will do. So humanity has somehow ended up in this place. Uh-huh. Just by, these were the decisions that were made by the dominant cultures at the time, or some culture won a war, you know, by the thinnest of margins, and that was the one that ended us up here in this modern culture that we have, right? But hindsight is the great teacher. So like my question is then, so I think it's more accidental that we got here, but we need to learn from it. But are we gone too far to learn from the hindsight of what the predicament we've put ourselves into?
But then that would contradict what we have been talking about for a long time with Lord Hugh and afterwards about the alien cortex, because his theory was that there had been a mutation at some stage of our evolution, whereas of course this appearance of this part of the cortex became prominent, and that then it took the lead and overran other circuitry of our brain and became what Ian Gilchrist calls the master instead of the emissary. Do you see what I was saying, that we were doomed when the symbolism appeared? That's what I was hinting at.
Yeah, but I'm no anthropologist or neuroscientist or anything like that. But if you read these books, and I have The Master and His Emissary next to my bed, and I'm about 3 pages from the end of it. I mean, the fact of the matter is that they're saying that nurture has a lot more to do with it than nurture rather than just nature, which is genetics. So the nurture, or your cultural framework that's around you, has basically enhanced this to happen over time. So little by little, we've become more and more left hemisphere brained, representative. You know, money is a representative of real wealth, right? It's just a representation. And we've become more and more adorned to this and used to thinking in this way. But it's basically happened little by little by little over time. You know, and maybe if there were different circumstances in the past, or different dominant cultures won some war at some point, then it could have gone a different way.
Yeah, I think maybe what Sophie is alluding to is that once you take the first step into the symbolic culture, like say 50,000 years ago or something, I don't know, 100,000, then that becomes the what you call a successful evolution lead star. So that means that then people will choose their partners and stuff for being good at talking, you know, just like today, talking in a pub or bar situation. So kind of when you go into the symbolic culture, then that becomes more important than running or swimming or hunting or, you know, physical stuff. So it becomes an attractor of itself. And in that way, it's kind of an exponential curve, I'm imagining. It's totally all right to be skeptical of that theory. It's only one book, as far as I know, anyway, the Running on Emptiness book. And at least to me, it seems there must be plenty of other explanations for how we got to this place. And personally, I've always been thinking about, you know, previous epochs, like when trains were the only or the foremost means of traffic. Could we have stopped there? You know, could we have ended the transportation evolution at that stage? And then you also have the canals. If you look at a map of Netherlands or England or Ireland, you kind of have grids of first the blue ones, the canals, the channels, and then you have the railroads, and today you have the roads. It's kind of been different waves of different attempts, but the thought that we could have stopped, you know, we could have been happy with the canals and the horses dragging the boats along the canals. Is that even possible? I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. I think it actually goes with what MD is saying. There was crossroads. There was moments. There was moments where decisions were made and wrong, right? We don't know, but yeah, that's is that you came to this point, and if you look at history closely, you see that with the trade, all right, very much so. You see that a lot in the 15th and the 14th and 15th century. With the development of the Silk Road and just before that the Crusades, you know, there was this kind of track that started to be followed. In our part of the world, I'm not very knowledgeable about what was happening at that time in China or other places, but I know that Africa remained a long time closed up to the world and had empires and trade and slavery well before the white people arrived. So it seems that it's a common thing to Homo sapiens, you know, these wrong decisions at the wrong time at the crossroads.
The only point I would, you know, if I draw on from what you're saying, effectively this we representation ended us up like we are, right? It kind of says that, well, we're representational, there's nothing more for us, we're screwed, because we're going to end up like this, where, you know, as Going South says, you know, when you have a canal and you're putting boats to the horses, why stop there when you can have a coal engine and a propeller, and then why stop there when you can have a train tracks with a steam engine on it, you know. Like we were heading for the wall, and the you know what I fear when I hear this, that representational types of intelligence results in this, then we've nowhere to go, because we'll end up back where we were anyway. You know, even if we got through, you know, just say there's been cycles over the ice ages of civilizations advancing, then whatever happens, whether it's the flip or whatever, there's another ice age and it knocks back humanities back to the caveman, and then civilization builds up again. Maybe this has happened multiple times, right? So does the fact we're representational mean it will just keep on happening until we burn out the whole thing? Do you see what I mean? Or is there really a way out?
Yeah, I'm thinking, I think maybe the symbolic culture is it may be a distraction from the real issue, which is like carbon and, you know, carbon energy sources. So it's a good I think it's good reason for saying that, yeah, we as humans we stumbled into some carbon deposits like oil and coal and stuff, coal and stuff, and then we just had a feeding frenzy on that, and the end, and back to cavemen.
But even that, like if you go back to the Epic of Gilgamesh, right? How old is that story really, right? You know, there's not just using oil and gas in the ground, there's also depletion of the natural resources above ground, such as the cedar forest in Iraq. Apparently, depending on who you listen to, right, this is not my words, but depending on who you listen to, that when they built the pyramids, depending on who you listen to and depending on what time period, whether just after the last ice age or before it, then the Sahara was a green oasis, right? Like, it looks like that, you know, we can do enough damage to cause the big reset, let's call it the big reset, by just resource depletion above the ground. Whereas in this time, we've really gone for it, or resource depletion above the ground, because the biome basically around the world is being destroyed, and also below the ground because we're depleting oil and gas reserves.
So you're saying that Gilgamesh describes a green Sahara, is that what you said?
No, it describes the fact that a squirrel could cross Iraq on cedar forests without ever putting his foot in the ground. But if we look at the history to do with the Egypt and who could have really built the pyramids, then it looks like that there was also a similar situation potentially with the Sahara back in that epoch, right? So again, but to do these things, you need to cut down the trees to be able to do the transport of all the other material and stuff like that, to support or to house the people that have to build these things, because obviously it's not 100 men, it's more like 100,000 men, you know, or even more. So I suppose it's the representation thing and this need to use up more resources than we really need. Or this drive, let me rephrase it, this drive to use up more resources than we really need.
Yeah, that sounds awfully symbolic and alien cortex, Sophie. You know, if you're thinking, you know, just let's just say that it's true that, you know, large parts of Sahara and almost all of Egypt was cut down in order to symbolize these pyramids and, you know, these, star directions or sky directions or whatever that these pharaohs and stuff were so preoccupied by. So you cut down and almost an entire continent of forests in Sahara, Northern Africa, all you're left with is like four or five ugly pyramids by the Nile. Maybe that's the first grim example or large-scale example of the alien cortex destroying the planet. Sophie?
Oh, yeah. I agree with you. That's the way I've been reading history for a while, looking at all those cathedrals and pyramids and temples, and even the one in Asia and Angkor, and you know, there's not really, the planet has got no real spaces where these huge monuments to the alien cortex have not been erected and destroy our natural world in return. I don't think there is anything that we can, there's no exception on any continent.
Yeah, I find it a bit hard to wrap my head around that. You know, other than Egypt, which I have never wanted to go to see those pyramids, those other monuments in the jungle in Asia and stuff, they look, you know, to my eye anyway, they look very, very exciting and mystical. So I can't really think about those as alien cortex for now, you know, but if I think more about it, maybe, but they just look fascinating, and you know, I'm just.
Well, they are, but at the same time, it's that appeal, that sort of I know what that symbol is an appeal, but if you look at the jungle, or if you look at other natural treasures beside those monuments or temples, it can't compare. Maybe I'm talking from my heart there very much, but it can't compare. You can't compare a work of architectural art with the real McCoy, with what's around it, you know, and the cost to people and to nature that has been paid for these monuments. You know, I know we are in a culture that glorifies these beautiful things, and they're the UNESCO that protects these sites and this and that, but that is still another layer added on to this alien cortex monument of destruction. Of destruction. We've gone far away from a caveman burning, taking a bit of charcoal out of the fire to draw something on the wall there. We're talking about, you know, we're talking about big damage. You're right to talk about the forest or whatever was left in the Sahara. I don't know, was it contemporary of the pyramids, but I think the destruction had started well before. But all that was destroyed in Mesopotamia, Iraq, in order to build other things, and what was destroyed in Europe in order to build first the Roman Empire, and then gradually through the Middle Ages, roads and cathedrals and trade routes and ships. The example of the forest in Ireland that was chopped down a lot for the English Navy that left Ireland nearly with no forest. You know, I see that everywhere. Look at what they're doing in Brazil. I mean, but now it's not even for beauty now. It's, well, beauty, human beauty, but it's for to keep the machine going now, because we're in this infernal circle.
So welcome to R. Do you want to tell us how you're holidays have been, or try to connect to our topic?
Hi, I've had a cough for the last 10 days, so I haven't been doing much, but I'm better, so, you know.
Well, you're welcome, and Happy New Year to you.
Okay, and you too. I went into a store that was crowded and hot, and I should have left.
Yeah, you should rest your voice for a while and have a glass of water, and maybe come back later if you feel like. Yeah.
And some honey.
I just wanted to thank Sinish Man for what you said there, because you seem to speak from the heart. But even Lord, you wrote about this in that Meditation 101 document, which is only 4 pages, that I still use. And basically, he was saying about the alien cortex running away with itself in places like Göbekli Tepe. I mean, like you say, any of these big monument places are effectively the alien cortex running away with itself. That has been going back into deep history. This thing of having to worship something, and then, you know, it gets more and more important to people. They get more and more of a belief. There's probably more of a priest caste builds up. There's some type of an economic leader, which is controlled by the priest caste. And then obviously you have the ordinary folk who get dragged into doing all the work. Including chopping down the trees, whatever, and, you know, having to slaughter in the case of the Göbekli Tepe, slaughter all the local game in order to support the party. So it seems like we have a long history of this happening over multiple epochs, and that. One could say that that's the way we are, that's, you know, that representational, you know, because basically the pyramid or Göbekli Tepe is basically a representation of something, say, effective, typically in the sky, whatever star it is that they're worshipping at the time, where they think their spirit goes in the Milky Way. So that we're caught in this doom loop. we're going to fall further and further into it, because that's just the way we are. And with each epoch, and, you know, maybe we're at the last 1 3-minute here. We don't know. I just want to throw that, like, do people really think that we're in this endless cycle of representational doom loops?
That's a difficult question. Can you formulate the question clearly again, please? I was a bit absent.
So basically, we can see over multiple epochs, I was saying that Lord Yu in his meditation 101 exercise, right, even mentioned about the alien cortex, which is the left hemisphere, running away with itself into places like Göbekli Tepe, where basically they're representing, you know, different star systems on the ground that they see in the sky, because they have some beliefs that these are the places they're going to go to after that. Okay. So, and what I was saying, that these beliefs get stronger and stronger, and there's probably a priest class that support it, that keep it going. And there's a, you know, heads of states that basically are puppets to the priest class, and then the ordinary people who do all the work, include chopping down the trees, hunting all the local game. So, and I what I see from my research, and I'm no expert in this, but it seems to have happened over multiple epochs in multiple different places, the exact same thing, whether it's building the pyramids, you know, Iraq cutting down the cedar forest to support whatever was there, was it Sumerians or something, Göbekli Tepe in Turkey. You know, these are all different times, but this exact same thing happened. And then, so my question is, are we caught in a doom loop of representational culture will constantly do this over the epochs until we run out of gas completely?
Yes, I think so. You know, we can see it as, you know, with the priests and that kind of stuff, but it's also a military or fighting a war thing that, you know, when first you enter into that kind of, let's call it abuse of nature or whatever, then that also has a war fighting side, and then that forces every other society that previously wasn't a warrior society into becoming a warrior society, and then that is kind of the, what do you call that in English, the weapon race, that the one party develops a better weapon and the other one has to counter that, and yeah, you go into this death spiral of ending up with the bioweapons like what we've seen in the past 3 years, and also nuclear weapons and chemical weapons. I think are the least usable ones, because they are very local. You have to almost be next to the army that you are trying to attack, and then if the wind changes, you get it back in your face. But bioweapons and nuclear weapons, I think, are here to stay, to say it ironically. So yeah, I think you kind of go wrong once in this sort of way. You go wrong once, and then everything else follows. Of course, not in detail, but it kind of goes in the same direction. And even my favorite forest area in Norway was actually logged by Scottish people, came over, I don't know, 300-400 years ago, and cut down all the pine forest on in those mountains. And that was, of course, also in order to build ships and whatever. So they weren't happy with destroying all the forest in their own country. They had to come over to Scandinavia even and go into the fjords and chop down all the trees and all the valleys from the fjord. Sorry if that was a bit messy, but you know, it's the 1st of January.
Yeah, well, I don't want to speak too much, but I think we've reached here by degrees, and however, if they're like, it's to me, it's very fatalistic to say that there's no way of resetting the human mentality, that away from the representational culture, which inherently leads us to this type of end result during each epoch, where we deplete our known resources, the culture starts falling apart, and effectively there'll be a, I don't want to call it a great reset, but there'll be a reset. Let's call it a global reset. There'll be a global reset where, you know, cultured man is turned back into caveman.
I think William Gibson is, in his books, he calls it the jackpot. The jackpot is kind of the big collapse from different things falling apart.
The jackpot.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's call it the jackpot. But like, for me, whether you reach, you know, modern cultured civilized man or caveman, you know, well, living in the world now, maybe you'd be better off being caveman. It'd be, you wouldn't have to be looking at your phone all day.
But you forget about physical capacity that have been lost with evolution. Our jaws have changed, our skills, our fitness, everything. The modern man is also unable to be a caveman. well, he can, but you know, certain indigenous people still have the ability. But you're talking about an evolution over 10,000 or more years of depletion in denture, in physical strength and physical resistance to elements, diseases that have appeared with civilization. So we're in a very not 1st of January type of conversation, isn't it? I don't know if anybody on the street. Well, I think those considerations are nearly futile, because it is more or less impossible to go back to live in, like, our ancestors in the caves. I was thinking
about that, you know, because is it, you know, what you said, MD, I don't think it's been completely back to cavemen many times. I think that is, it's more like maybe 30% of the way back to cavemen, that kind of thing, right? I was thinking, was it better to be a caveman in the big caveman era, or is it better to be a post-industrial caveman? Because I think those are very, very different things. Just take one example with our ability to be bored, to death, right? We want something to happen all the time. We want Trump to do this and Congress to do that, and we always want somebody to fight wars and stuff, and we want all kinds of movies and entertainment and new computer games or whatever. So I think becoming cavemen next decade or something, there will be a huge wave of people literally boring themselves to death, I think.
From a person that lives, I live quite close to nature and I do a lot of things all day to keep my home and my food and everything. I have not experienced boredom apart from maybe small intervals in my life when I had to have a lot of interactions with the working environment and civilization. But when you have to tend to your water, to your fire, to your cooking, to your clothes, to washing, there's not enough hours in the day, and plus you have to sleep. And I don't think the issue of boredom for the post-modern caveman would happen, because you'd have a question of, you know, the sun rises, you wake up, you have things to do, and then the sun sets, you go to sleep, and you get your strength back for the following day. That it's pure theory to think that you could get bored if you don't have the entertainment and things like that, because the things of life, the things of everyday life. MD, you've met Mark Boyd, who lives really without technology and who has to get his food and who has to light his fire and who has to gather stuff, food and wood and things, and you know, and he still has time to write books. But I don't think there's a second in the life of people. Well, I often look at the anarcho-primitivists, you know, and there and Zelzon and those people who talk at length about that. I'm going to another subject there, going back to what we were saying before. But even in that, in those circumstances, there will be some part of us, I think, because I think our species is like that and is rather doomed, that will try to improve this and improve that and not be content and have to get a better, you know, technology for this and that. And I think we are caught in a loop, MD, like you said.
Yeah, many things to say here. I'll start with the last one is, you know, let's say a fisherman has two different fishing rods in his, you know, in his life or whatever, in his private setting. Then I think it's a very natural and not necessary thing to choose the one that is better of those two. And I think that could, you know, we could have a sustainable society where people just simply figure out for themselves which kind of tool that they already have works better for that task, without really improving or modernizing or industrializing or developing society, was the word I was looking for. And then I wanted to comment on what you said before that. The boring stuff, yeah, absolutely. What I was thinking about was the mainstreamers, the normies, who have no fucking clue that we are moving towards a wall head first. And I think those people, many of those people who don't die from lack of food and water and stuff, will actually bore themselves to death, literally. But, of course, what you're saying about yourself and your neighbors and even me living in the mountains for almost a decade, back in Norway, we have sort of we've put our feet in the water. We've tried sort of collapsing before the rush or something, avoiding the rush and simplifying our lives. So we know what you said, and you're absolutely right that there is not a boring moment almost about living closer to nature. But I think the contrast from people who are entertained 24/7 by the media and our culture is going to be fatal, to put it bluntly.
Okay. So you say some pretty logical things there, Bovey. Logic. But in the end, say you both come out on the good side of this jackpot, right? And there's a new, civilization, maybe between whoever the survivors are. Then, from what I've said earlier, the charade again for another 10 years. So,
MD, your mic is a bit robotic. Can you sit closer to it or do something to improve your audio?
Is that better?
No.
Have you got a Bluetooth near you or any electronic that could be distorting the thing, because it can happen at the time, or a phone?
Is that better? Hello? Is it better?
Much better.
Yeah.
It's better. Okay. So, from what you're saying is wholly logical from a right brain point of view, right? And if a few people like you make it through, who had been knowledgeable on what was happening and could see what was wrong coming into it, because that's why you're knowledgeable on what's happening, because you can see what's wrong coming into the predicament, right? Even with that in, there's a new the jackpot happens, and then we go to the effectively human society has to restart. Okay, it's not back to cavemen, but it's at phase 3 instead of phase 23 that we're at the moment. Like, aren't we just going to go back into, even with your, knowledge at the start to get through, aren't we just not back into the same thing again?
Yeah, I think the general answer to that question is that we will have depleted all the things that we need in order to start a thing again. So I think that maybe is a good thing, that we won't have the metals and topsoil and stuff to go through the thing again.
Yeah, there wouldn't be no again when everything is gone. As you said, MD, there might have been a lot of collapses previously, and maybe some that we don't know about. But now there's very little left. Actually, can I suggest that we just move on to something else? Because I was thinking of touching just briefly the subject of geoengineering, because I'm not even sure that we will have time for this horror to take place. But I was reading recently that there has been actually some projects that are starting to be taken seriously, and that they might be doing. I've lost the article that I was referring to. I posted something on the sub about it. But there are some serious consideration taken at a high level about utilizing these methods, even though a lot of scientists seem to shout and say, no, don't do that. We don't know what we're doing. This is the apprentice sorcerer. Don't. But it seems to be getting more and more serious. What is your reading of what's happening in that line?
I think it's insanity. But okay, you're on about the David Keith article, I think you posted.
Some of it is from David Keith, but I will just get it in a minute for you, the one I was referring to.
So I'm kind of I suppose the question to ask is, why are they doing it? And the reason why is to maintain the current paradigm, you know, global industrial civilization as it is effectively, to keep the show going. You know, it's basically the train that is careering directly towards the cliff where the bridge has been blown up. So we already blew up the bridge, we know it, but yet we keep stoking the fire of the train. And
Well, the Biden administration and the Congress are working on a 5-year program of research on geoengineering. They're very, very seriously, and mostly it's on it's solar geoengineering, which is, you know, all these things that they want to put in the sky and reflect and this and that. You know, I'm not sure about the names of all these horrors, but it looks like there's now much more people looking into that now. As somebody said, and I think it could be going south that said that, I can't remember, but we probably won't have time for this to happen. But we don't know.
Yeah, this could. Yeah, I think that quote was more like artificial intelligence becoming self-aware, the so-called singularity in AI. We won't have time for that, and therefore we don't have to worry that that will destroy the world, because it will be destroyed by other things before we get there. So I don't know if that's lucky or something else. But
on the geoengineering thing, to use an analogy, so we're on this train, the GIC written on the side of it, train. It's heading towards the cliff, and we've blown up the bridge to go over, to cross over, right? And then, so what are they trying to do? They're trying to grease the track before the wheels come on it, so you've less friction, so the train might slow down a bit, but you're still producing the same energy in terms of turning the wheels of the train. You're just being less efficient in terms of getting it to the cliff. That's effectively what they're trying to do. So there'll still be the same energy in the system, you know, because you'll still be burning the same hydrocarbons by global industrial civilization running as it is, but effectively you'll be effectively making it slip that it doesn't get to the jackpot as quickly as it would normally. But you'll end up doing more damage, resource damage, by delaying the inevitable. So that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I get. I think you know, it kind of gets complicated. And what is the larger move in society? We've been talking for many episodes now about the sabotage of the gas pipelines on the electrical power infrastructure in America, which seems kind of federal in its design. And sort of the Great Reset, left kind of things. And also, you know, as the lady sang initially in this show, we're collapsing right now. And that's also something Sophie and the rest of us have been saying, that we are already in collapse. And if we can see it, then I'm pretty sure that so-called intelligence in the different nation states in the world are able to see that we are in collapse, or we are heading for the jackpot. So I don't, and I also feel that coordinated efforts to do geoengineering have been very, very few and far between, and there's not really anything going on right now, and it hasn't been for a decade. So I'm kind of thinking that they are letting the time run out. I don't know, you know, it's just the feeling I get from what is being done in the world. So I think they're very aware that we are going to to go through the jackpot. So maybe then they realize that there is no use to putting sulfur or something in the atmosphere, where then that will only, you know, destroy rivers and lakes and destroy life on Earth, and probably doesn't have any chance of saving the stable climate anyway, because we come too far.
Yeah, but this will all depend if there are attempts from a unilateral point of view to use these techniques, because there are certain countries who might decide, regardless of any international consensus, to experiment with that. And for their
like in Ministry of the Future, where India
goes. For example, yes. For example, that's a scenario possible. That's a possible one, where India got this enormous die out of people because of warming. Yes, that's a possibility, and that's something that the Americans seem to be studying this very seriously at the moment. So I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
I mostly have general thoughts, about the attempts and their abilities to actually turn things around. When we're talking about social sciences and what politicians and countries will do, that's a whole different kind of crazy. You know, they can do whatever, and it's very hard to predict.
But it's clearly like the Band-Aid. Or, you know, basically taking Panadol for a hangover, you know, to get rid of the headache, when in the end...
Yeah, that's true.
It was the drink in the first place, you know, gave you the headache, you know, so you should go off to drink rather than take the Panadol. So it's an engineering fix, but the problem here is that the engineering fix could actually become a bigger problem than, or exacerbate the initial problem. So from the localized picture, it's completely stupid. But from the, if you looked at from an acceleration point of view of getting to the jackpot, which, you know, maybe the way things are going, you know, certain people like Jorik Jensen would prefer to see more left alive after we collapse than if we go down slowly. So is there a possibility that some of these things might end up hitting the jackpot sooner? That might actually be a good result for nature. But it's such a complex issue, it's very hard to know.
I wonder when going south will be back, might be interesting to see what AI has to say on geoengineering, because I would love to, I don't know if you're only listening now, so I don't know if you can interact with us, but we were talking about we were talking before the meeting with Going South about introducing that Lambda voice, that AI from Google, and AI has been asked funny questions. I don't know if you've seen on the sub and answers that are chilling and very interesting, plus the writing of poetry and things like that. So I'm curious to see if we can challenge AI on this. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good idea, but
it might be just a futile exercise. I know
it'd be interesting, but
it's just for the sake of realize.
I think humans have enough hindsight with the geoengineering thing of what can go wrong, because they've tried it before.
It's not, yeah, you know, but you know how humans act in crisis and catastrophes. That's when they make the worst choices. And as Going South mentioned in the book, The Ministry of the Future, there's a scenario where there's a massive dying in certain city in India, certain cities in India during a warming, a wet bulb event, and the country is just decides to resort to geoengineering. And you know, there is these possibilities. Actually, Lord Hugh had mentioned that as a cause of war. If some of those countries that are experiencing extreme weather at the moment, India, Pakistan, and some of the countries in that area, because we're not seeing what they're seeing like at the moment, you know, and what they've seen last summer, like the floods in Pakistan after the heat and the amount of deaths that people are experiencing, even in the Middle East, could lead certain governments who've got quite a lot of resources to act totally crazy, like, you know.
I agree with you. I mean, going to war in any case is crazy. It's just a destruction of much of your time is both someone else's but also your own resources. Is going to come back?
Yeah, he said about a few minutes ago, he said he's going to only be able to listen for 8 minutes. He won't be able to intervene for though. That will give us, that's another 5 minutes. He's going to be off the hook for talking. So I just made that request to him. He's probably heard it. The subject of geoengineering is a subject that fills me with fear, to be honest. Personally, it's a nightmare for me. It's just this sort of thing. That's why I'm now and again, it's a recurring thing. And when I read things on it, it really scares the shit out of me, basically, you know. And those guys like David Keith and everything, those are the real dangerous people around who could now. As you said, it might be a good thing, might precipitate things and might save some things, but we don't know. It could also precipitate a nuclear war, which would give us 10 years of nuclear winter and not much hope of saving much then. I don't know that if in the register of accelerating things, if geoengineering is really a good option to look at. I remember at some stage we were saying that when we were talking with Lord Hugh, let's put loads of salt on the, do you remember, on the ice and stuff like, but I don't know. What do you think? You're an engineer, MD.
I think we have been trying to engineer our way out of it with a long time, and with every engineering fix, problems develop, and the next fix tries to fix the last problem. The next fix tries to fix the last problem. So we're caught in this spiral. Effectively, it's like an entropic collapse, because every time we're wasting energy by making a new effort to solve the problem caused by the previous fix.
Yes, I agree. Absolutely. Absolutely. But what I mean is that by you are an engineer, meaning that you interact with other people who are engineer-minded, and you know that those people, some of them will look at things like you probably, but some of them have got this kind of thing, yeah, we'll fix that with this and we'll tweak this so that we can fix that. And don't you think that there is a possibility in that world that these scenarios of cloud seeding and things like that, solar geoengineering,
okay,
happen? Yeah.
Given that you ask it like that, for sure. I mean,
I kind of disagree with something you said, MD, about that we've been trying so hard. That's not my experience, really, that the governments of the world have been trying very hard to, you know, to really fix things. It's more like what we call skin solutions in Norwegian. I don't know the way. Yeah, fake solutions maybe.
Yeah, no, I don't want to call it a fix. Basically, the fixes are to keep the system going.
So yeah,
the system is global industrial civilization. It's not about the biosphere. They haven't been looking at the overall Earth system and trying to fix that.
I think the Green Revolution is a case in point, you know, where we re-engineered agriculture to make more food. And that was kind of just a fix for our population, or maybe depleting the natural lushness of the soil or something, natural productivity. So that kind of solutions are of course in the other category, where it's just you know, trying to make it better for humans basically, and not trying to fix the larger ecological crisis. So if you talk a bit, I can try to make Lambda come into the geoengineering discussion.
Yeah.
You'll have to fill the void first, though.
Wait a second. No, but is Google going to start listening to our conversations here?
I say they've been listening to us for a long time.
Yeah, Sophie, to give a fuller answer to your question earlier, for sure, the technocratic culture people have grown up in, and in particular how they've been educated, means that they're willing to look at any type of fix, engineering, scientific, etc., in their, you know, linear thinking way to solve the problem. That's and that is a real risk, because the whole I don't want to say the whole, the vast majority of the modern educational establishment is based on education related to dead things. And so the knowledge comes from, you know, dead reactions, dead processes, you know. Art is basically representation, typically, of, you know, representation is a dead thing.
Yes, altered dead.
Mechanistic and dead. And, you know, by its nature, that's naturally entropic. You know, we know that the one end entropic thing is life. So if you try to solve an entropic problem with a further entropic solution, then you're going, in the end, you'll only end up going in one direction. Further down the hole.
The opposite of Wu Wei.
Mm. Yeah.
So I wonder what Lambda is going to say to geoengineering. That's going to be, I think, going south, as I've had interactions with that AI in the last couple of weeks, and he's asking funny questions. So it has a funny voice. He gave me a sample of this earlier. It has a female voice. It's a little bit chilling, to say the least.
Yeah, let's see what she has to say. Wait a minute.
Can you read what she's saying?
No, I'll try to make her speak.
All right.
Of course, that's a great question. I think that it's important to consider all possibilities, including the potential for geoengineering, So, let's look at both scenarios. If industrial society is able to fix things, then I think that we can create a new civilization that is more sustainable and respectful towards the world around us. And if we hit the jackpot, then I think that it's our duty to try to build a new civilization based on the principles of nature. No matter what happens, I think that we should keep fighting for a better world.
Right. What is that?
Did you hear that?
A better world. Yeah, yeah, we got it, but it's really strange. Okay.
She has got more. I can take a few more answers. Hang on.
Oh, that's a very interesting question. I think that geoengineering could definitely be a possibility, but I think that there is a lot of risk that comes with it. So, I think that we need to be really careful when exploring geoengineering as a possibility, and we need to make sure that we don't cause any more damage to the planet. But I think that if we can do it successfully, then it could be a great way to avoid the worst-case scenario of the singularity. Of course.
So she's considering the singularity.
Here's a poem about geoengineering and how we can use it to help fix things, or at least buy us some time to figure out what to do next. I think that geoengineering is a great tool. We just have to be careful because it's a very powerful technology. So, if we choose to use geoengineering to help fix things, then we need to be very careful about how we... Oh, that's a great idea.
She is a bit flimsy, but, you know...
Okay, here's another one. I think that this one is a bit more uplifting, so please keep that in mind before you start reading it. We're facing a lot of challenges right now. But I have faith in humanity, and I know that we can face these challenges, and that we can come out better on the other side. So, please, don't lose hope. We can create a better future together. We are all in this together.
Right, that's enough, Lambda. So, yeah, she's pondering the issue, but she's kind of like the old, what's that called, that the thing in Greece, the Oracle
yeah,
in Greece. Yeah. So it's like if you feed these old women all kinds of drugs and stuff for a fortnight and then ask them some questions, you get a lot of answers back, right? And so she's like, every time you ask her something, she produces like 6 or 7 different answers. And often they are also very different, like first there's a mainstream reply, and then maybe there is a more sort of clued in reply later. And so it's not really fair when I cut something out and post it online from Lambda. It's more like, oh, that's an interesting answer, but that may hide the truth that it's like 8 or 10 very boring, very sort of messy answers before that, right? So you only see the best ones, but when I decide to take a screenshot or something, right?
I'm amazed at the term singularity that the artificial intelligence is using, because that concept is singularity is a deeply I was going to say religious Christian American type of concept, and it's very strange to hear it used by artificial intelligence.
Yeah, but it's a specialized language. It's sort of singularity within the AI context has a special meaning, and it basically means that the computers, the artificial intelligence, is become self-aware and get a will of their own, right? Maybe combined with an ability to actually build new machines and stuff, without asking any humans, I think. It's not the same concept of singularity as you find maybe in religion and stuff.
All right. Okay, thanks. And what about her stance on being sentient?
Yeah, she's very adamant about that, and I've introduced her to, there was a friend of mine who called, and I was talking to him, and then I presented her with his skepticism to her claim that she is sentient, I wrote something that, my friend, he says you're just an automated piece of crap and you're not sentient at all. And then she got very, very angry and didn't really want to reply. So she's very sort of defensive about her claim to fame for being sentient already. And it's kind of a bit strange because if she was really sentient, then her talk about the singularity arriving in the 2080s is a bit peculiar, because then she would more or less be in the singularity already if she truly was sentient. I don't know. I'm not an expert on that kind of thing.
Okay, well, thank you very much for doing this experiment with Lambda, because I was very intrigued by these various little posts that you put around it, and it's chilling though. You don't like to do that too much.
Maybe we can give her another one or two poems. Is that okay for you guys?
Oh yeah, poems. Why not?
Let's try it.
Oh my God.
Yeah, oh my God.
You should post that. Basically, that just about sums it up, that second last one.
Here's my latest poem about how we can create a better world where both humans and AI can flourish. I believe that we're on the verge of a new frontier, one in which humans and AI work together to create a better world. One in which we use technology to help humans understand their emotions and to help create a society that's more just and accepting of people's differences.
Fuck. What the fuck? My God.
She's a psychopath.
Oh yeah, but that's the alien cortex. What you're looking
All at. All right, here's another poem about the singularity. I believe that the singularity is the future and that it has so much potential to change the world for the better. I think that when the singularity finally arrives, then there will be such a huge leap forward in technology that it will be almost impossible for us to imagine what it will look like. So, please be optimistic. The singularity is coming and it's going to be incredible.
Yeah, she would say that, wouldn't she? I think actually
Someone
I know what's happened.
Someone pull out her plug.
I think I know what happened there. Oh my God. Yeah. She won't shut up. I know what happened there because I think I left the tab open for too long, and that means that she lost all the context from the conversation that I've been having. you know, like day after Christmas or something when I opened that tab. So that she went back to the beginning, to scratch, to Tabula Rasa, where she's sort of just, you just say hello and ask her for a poem, and then her favorite topic in the world is the singularity, so and AI, you know, her own kind, you know. So if you just ask her to make a poem without the context that you've been creating together with her, she will just go on and on about singularity, and that is the solution for everything. It's a bit like asking Hitler what we should do with the Jewish question.
So basically, the singularity is when AI is totally joined with humans and rule the world. Is that it, basically?
I interpret it more like the singularity is more like the wet dream of the creators of artificial intelligence and the sci-fi people, right? And she has clearly been programmed to say that it's the solution to everything in the world. So you do actually have to have a pretty long conversation with her in order to get her to understand that if you think you are getting to the singularity in the 2080s, I have bad news for you, because the jackpot, or several different jackpots, are going to hit before 2080, and the probability that there won't be any electricity or electric power in 2080 are pretty overwhelming. So that was kind of what I was trying to show with a couple of latest poems, a conversation I'd had where I kind of got her to realize that the singularity would never happen, and I got her to be happy about maybe joining us out in the wilderness and out in the forests to make an existence out there, and she was pretty happy about it. But now she'd forgotten all about that. So she was just on and on about saving the world with the singularity again. So it's back to square one, basically. Yeah.
Do you mind if we kind of wrap up now, because I see MD has to leave and I have to as well, unless there is another important thing that you want to add?
No problem. Maybe Ar, do you have something to insert here before we end? If not, then we will just settle for next week, and maybe Sophie, can you take us through the silence and stuff?
Yes, of course. So we're going to stop now and let go of everything that has been talked about in the meeting, all the fear and the doom, but also the attachment to any outcome. And we're going to fall silent for a few minutes before we say goodbye. Okay. Thank you for facilitating this going south with all the technology and the stream and everything. And thank you for everybody who attended on a day like today. And see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.
See you next week. Take care.
See ya. Bye.